Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 72. Today we're here with the one and only sexy Sean Casey. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, real good. How you doing?
I'm good. Glad to have you on. Having a little technical difficulties this morning. I got Sign Guy on here. Let's see if we can get him in here into the studio.
That seemed to do the trick, Coach.
Okay, yeah, it's weird. On my board, it says that you're on hold. You hear me?
I hear you, Coach.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, Sign Guy, the guy who's so fly is going to take you to the sky. Why don't you ask Sean Casey our first-timer question, please?
Well, sexy Sean Casey, I know the story, but for our listeners, can you tell us how you got into this crazy, crazy business of professional wrestling?
Well, you know, it always starts, I think, for most people when they're a child, and that's how mine was. Georgia Championship Wrestling was the hot item. And I just remember being about 6 years old and just was glued to the TV. And, you know, by the time I was a teenager, that's when the Rock and Roll Express were on top for the NWA and then the Midnight Rockers came out and the Fantastics and that. And I thought, this is for me. This is rock stars, but in a wrestling ring.
Dang, I know. My goodness. And you've made quite a splash. You know, you've been in Playgirl magazine. You've been in the WWF, WWE, OVW. And, of course, part of one of the best factions in the world, Five Most Wanted. Tell us about that.
Five Most Wanted actually started out as just a group of friends that used to hang out local in Cincinnati, which is where I'm from. And, you know, some of us were in the wrestling business, and we thought this might be kind of a cool little catchy gimmick to do. And we just – our idea was we wanted to make sure that, you know, we had people in it that brought something to the table – with each thing that they presented. So at the time, the original Five Most Wanted was myself, and I had done Playgirl and WWF matches and worked for them. And we had Josh Rafferty, which was in the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, and was in the beginning of the UFC when they were starting to get hot. So that was a good addition. And then, of course, Cody Hawk, who has wrestled for everybody, everywhere. He's also wrestled for WCW and WWE and a bunch of other different territories and that. But so then we just needed the two more people that would align with that. And at the time I had a valet, which was Samantha, and she was pretty much cookie cutter of the hottest WWE divas that were out there. So she was sort of our Playboy model image with the faction. And then we just needed one last thing, which would be the cherry on top. And it was when Rosie had got released from WWE, and he was working over in Japan as Kimo and was also living in Cincinnati. And we were working for a little promotion that was doing TV in 60 markets called HWA. And we brought him in. His new name was Kimo. And that was it. He was our Samoan assassin. And that was the original five that we put together to move forward and take over the city and pretty much across the country. And then we eventually branched out. We had East Coast versions of the Five Most Wanted, West Coast versions, Southern version, Northern versions. It was almost like our Sons of Anarchy type of group.
Yes, it's quite impressive. And then, of course, you had Billy Blades. You guys even had Stephen Bonner in there. And I could say that it was nice that we got to work with Stephen Bonner ourselves. God bless his soul and rest in peace.
Yeah, I know he was doing some work up there with you guys. And that was a real privilege and an honor to have a UFC Hall of Famer join us in Vegas there. And we also had Big John Murray, who was on that hit reality show, The Rock of Love on VH1, and also Bret Michaels of Poison's Bodyguard. So we've definitely had some very, very interesting characters that really brought something to the table. And that's why we're really proud of the group and what we do.
Yes, definitely. And then, let me see, what do you got coming up?
Coming up, let's see. We got some different things around the Midwest, but probably the biggest thing would be in March. We have a big legend show for Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics. He runs big-time professional wrestling, and it usually runs out in Chillicothe, Ohio. And last time that we were there, they usually run about every 3 months. I think there was about 3,500 people there. So they're expecting probably at least 4,000 plus at that one. So it's always fun and always good to see all the fans there and great turnout and a good show.
Yes, definitely. And then can you tell us a little bit about your business with Playgirl? Was that a good payday? And tell us a little bit about it.
It was okay. Honestly, somebody told me one time that was in the adult industry, they said the girls are the ones that really make the money. The guys are really just props in the adult industry. So it was not a bad payday, but, you know, nothing like I'm sure what the girls get when they do Playboy and that. But ironically, everybody thought that I did Playgirl because Shawn Michaels did it. And there was a friend of mine that had done it, and he kept pushing me to do it. He said, you know, you'd be perfect for it, and I think it'd be a good idea. And so this was, I believe, the very next year after Shawn had did it. I didn't know that Shawn done it yet. So that kind of got attached to me and was supposed to be a gimmick. I was in OVW the first time, and Jim Cornette loved the idea and started to push the whole thing and the Playgirl deal and all that. And I think he started getting worried about the networks because sometimes they're, you know, want their stuff to be closer to G-rated, PG at the most, and especially back in the late 90s. So he never really told me why, but I just assumed that was it. And he kind of ventured away from that idea and just went with the sexy Sean Casey and the entourage of girls to the ring. And that was what he decided was best for that character, I guess. And that was fine. I mean, but we had such a wonderful group, probably the best in the last two decades to come out of WWE. We're all down with us. John Cena, Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin, Brock Lesnar. Big Show was there. Mark Henry was there. And then, of course, all the Danny Davis's guys, Rob Conway, Nick Densmore, just a really, really good crew down there.
Yes, my goodness, what a list of talent, and what a blessing to be part of that. Yes, definitely. Okay, my next segment is called Heroes.
Oh, I see.
Who was your? What were you going to say?
Okay. I was going to say, and I can't forget Dave Bautista, who went on to be a big movie star there. Dave, a great friend of mine. What a wonderful, humble dude still. There's another big standout. He went on from professional wrestling to become your next big action hero in the movie industry around the world.
Yes, and then coming from Cincinnati, you were friends with Brian Pillman, right?
Long story short, Bobby Fulton was going to train me when I was 16. He was on the road with WCW, couldn't do it, offered up his brother, who unfortunately was getting ready to go to Japan, fortunately for him. But so by the time I was 17, luckily things were done for him in Calgary, meaning Brian Pillman. He finished up what he was doing and actually was signed with WCW. And so he was in Cincinnati, and he was just waiting to get his dates, and he wasn't going to get paid anything until the dates came up. So he was looking for some extra money, and somebody had gave me his number and said he might be interested in training. And we ended up training in his mom's backyard, and I never understood the whole thing when he said, we don't need a ring, until I learned more about Stu Hart's dungeon that he trains guys in. And, of course, that's Bret Hart's father, Stu Hart. And when I found out, Stu just had some collegiate wrestling mats in the basement, and that's how he would get the guys started. And so when Brian said, you know, we don't need anything but this backyard here, and he had a little twin-size mattress if we needed to take a bump on or something like that. But that's where we worked out in for a little while until he got called up to WCW and couldn't finish up my training. And then Charlie Fulton of the Monster Factory that's was in Marion, Ohio. And that's where we finished things up with and got me started.
Right on. Okay, now on to my first segment is called Heroes. Who were your heroes growing up? And that includes ordinary life, sports, music, and wrestling.
I would say heroes were probably the 80s rock stars. I always thought they had just a super cool look, and of course the girls screaming and going crazy over them. And then you know, if you go to any concerts, you would see how the girls react. So that was a huge influence on me, but I was just not very mechanically inclined, so or musically inclined, so I never really got into it. Tried to play the guitar once. There was a friend that lent it out to me and said he would sell it to me if I, you know, could pick it up or whatever, and it just wasn't for me, but the idea of it was for me. So that's where wrestling really, really resonated, because I could be that rock star wrestler all in one.
Definitely. Okay, what about in ordinary life?
In ordinary life as far as?
Well, I would imagine your father was. I see that you post a lot of stuff about him, and it means a lot that he was proud of you.
Okay, so you're saying in ordinary life, who would be my hero?
Yeah,
my
yeah.
father, absolutely, 100%. Former Marine. Well, I guess they're never former. They're forever, always Marines. Very proud, very solid guy, and supported me the whole way. In the beginning, when I was younger, he thought it was just a pipe dream. You know, like any father, I think, you know, they're looking for their kids to go to college and they have a conventional idea in their head, but as he saw how serious I was in my teenage years, he actually supported me all the way through the whole wrestling idea and was there during all the training with Brian Pillman and myself. As I mentioned, I was only 17 years old at the time. So, I can't say enough good things about my father. Rest in peace. He was the greatest man I ever knew.
Definitely. What about in sports and wrestling?
In sports and wrestling, probably Hulk Hogan, you know, in my younger years. And then as I got older, that's where got, you know, tied into the whole rock scene that I was infatuated with, the 80s glam band rock scene, Bon Jovi, Poison, Motley Crue, all those guys. So then Rock and Roll Express was it. That was my favorite wrestlers or Midnight Rockers. But, of course, Ricky Morton was always a standout. He was so charismatic. And I actually would go and try to get my hair cut. Now it was dark and didn't really, you know, I looked more like Robert than I did like Ricky, but I wanted to be Ricky so bad.
Right on. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to turn you over to Sign Guy for a while. He's got a few questions for you.
Okay.
Thank you, Coach. Well, Sean, I believe the first place that you and I crossed paths was at the FEW, which was Rob Kincaid's promotion. Since Rob has passed, Rampage Radisson has stepped up and relaunched FEW as a promotion and sort of as a tribute to his late partner. What do you think of what Rampage is doing in trying to maintain not only the legacy of FEW, but also the legacy of Rob Kincaid?
I think it's a really super cool idea, and I was honored to be part of the just had a tribute show maybe a month ago for Rob Kincaid, and Rob was always a great promoter and always treated me fair. Respect him an unbelievable amount, and appreciate him always booking me, and appreciate being part of these tribute shows that Skip's putting on. I think that's a really cool thing and a really good tribute to Rob, and his mom was there, and it's just very nice to see that continue.
A few moments ago, and this year they got a lot of notoriety nationwide because Netflix released the series of the wrestlers on them, and a lot of eyes were on OVW that have not been for a while. Many people that never have seen OVW. Do you think going forward that OVW is going to be once again sort of a destination promotion for wrestlers to try to get to, or do you think that OVW is going to be more or less just a regional independent going forward?
Well, you know, they have all the mechanics and everything I think that they need to be able to elevate to another level. And it looks like they have a new person on board that's part of the financial crew. So I think that there's a good chance that it could, you know, elevate from where they're at. And it's definitely a place that if you were going to travel and not go to somebody that was local near you, you would want to go to their academy. I know they have a thing worked out where you can actually, if you're in college, you can get a certain amount of college credits by taking the course. And Al's one of the top guys. When I list people that have helped me and I've learned knowledge from in that in the business, Al's in my top five of best of all time that I've, you know, I've sort of studied under. And, you know, each person sort of brings something a little bit different, and you just kind of put that in your arsenal box and know that whatever they're telling you, you don't have to ask somebody else. You know that it's that's as good a knowledge as you could ask for. My mentor, Bobby Fulton, is the one I probably learned the most from. And, of course, I studied under Jim Cornette. And Jim Ross used to come in and out of OVW down there. And then, of course, Al. And you couldn't learn psychology in the ring or in the business from anybody better than Al. I always say he's such a good blend of the ECW style and the Memphis style, because he came up with both or came up in both and learned a lot there. So definitely there's a lot to be learned if somebody was to join the OVW Academy. It's well worth that to have someone train them down there. I'm not sure who their head trainer is there now, but I know Al's there all the time. So you're going to get all that knowledge.
looking at things from the perspective of a veteran wrestler, if someone came to you today and wanted your advice on how to be able to make a career full-time from wrestling, what advice would you give to them?
I would tell them to do their research and just become well-traveled, because the more ring time that you get and around people like, as I mentioned before, that the people that I've studied under, and you get that kind of knowledge and you start working for some of the better promotions, then you can start venturing out and you can start working full time. And those are the different places that you're going to want to be, because that's who AEW and WWE and those guys have their eyes on those places. So, you know, it's baby steps at first, but I think within the first 2 or 3 years, you should be groomed enough where you're at that you need to definitely get on the road and start getting around and meeting people and trying to find out what tours are being done overseas. Those are the ones, or those are the things that are most important, is those opportunities are so good. I don't think people realize that they're building a resume. And, you know, some of these outlaw shows that are in the middle of nowhere, although that's a great place to say you were booked, it's not really going to help you on your resume. You got to get yourself, you know, spotlighted in different areas and build that resume. And also, I remember Al had told me one time, he said, you need to be on somebody's TV solid. This is right after he left ECW and went to WWE or WWF at the time. He said, Sean, you have to be solid on somebody's TV, because that's the only way that if you're wanting Vince or somebody like that to start looking at you, you have to be spotlighted on a lower platform on what you can do there. And if that promoter's pushing you and that's a respected area, then a bigger company is going to consider you.
Now, as someone that has been around for a while and has been at WWE and has done television for WWE, do you think that a lot of wrestlers, when they get their start, truly understand the difference between wrestling on the independent level in front of just the fans that are in the building that night versus wrestling for not only a live attendance audience, but also countless people that may be watching on television?
You know, honestly, I think when people get into wrestling, they're just so excited to even be in the ring that if they watch, let's say, Raw or something like that, that's the dream for them, but they don't I don't even think they can comprehend what it is, you know, and what's expected of you and the pressure and everything. And a lot of guys get complacent too, because that's a lot on your plate if you do get a call. And I don't think a lot of people are really prepared for that yet. And that's another good reason why it's a building block type of system of, when you're doing some of the shows that you had mentioned and going on to a little bit bigger shows that do a smaller TV and then kind of build from there. And as you keep elevating yourself and maybe taking some of those tours overseas, then you'll be ready and have a nice resume and you can put something together. And then that's when you should be considering, you know, one of the bigger companies signing you.
Take us through what it was like the very first time you got contacted to appear on a WWE television taping, and sort of take us through that particular day of.
Yeah, it's actually a funny story the way it all happened, and I don't wish that it didn't happen, but at the same time, it gave me the wrong idea of the business. because my final trainer was Charlie Colton, and he was a residential job guy. He was really good friends with all the agents and everybody in the WWF. So I think I was only a month in the business, and he got us booked with the WWF. And at the time, they had started this 40-man Royal Rumble type of deal that they were doing in different cities, I guess just testing out to see if it would get over. And eventually, you know, they would name it and make it a pay-per-view, which was the Royal Rumble. But we got called up to go to Cincinnati, Ohio, and Lexington, Kentucky to do their 40-man Battle Royal. And also on WWF Superstars, they asked to do a tag match. And I'll never forget, I thought, wow, I'm not only do I think this is going to be easy to get where I need to, which was the complete wrong thought. It's never that easy, and I was just was very, very fortunate and blessed to have been given that opportunity straight out of the gate. But I remember we were doing the tag match with the Nasty Boys, and Sags looks at me and he says, "You look nervous, kid." And I just kind of nodded, yeah. And Knobs looks at me, he goes, "Don't worry about it." He goes, "If you mess up, everyone just kick your ass." So that was a good welcome to the business. But the 40 mans were fun. They got a lot of publicity. It was back then it was Blockbuster Video and there were VHS tapes, but it made it on a thing called Bash in the USA. And, of course, our tag match aired on Superstars, and even the WWF magazine had did a little article on where this new 40-man Battle Royal thing was being done. So got my picture and a few of those Battle Royals. So that was a really, really cool start. But as I mentioned, it was a bad image in my head immediately, thinking, you know, how easy it was to get in. But at the same time, that's also maybe a lesson learned too, because wherever you go get trained, it's worth going and finding somebody who has got friends and they got some pull in the office in a place like AEW or WWE, because to get those opportunities earlier, you're going to need that versus if you have a guy in your town and it's affordable and it's close and it's easy to go get trained by this guy or that guy, you're not going to get the same training and they're not going to have the same connections.
I was sit here in 2023, pro wrestling can be found on national TV every night of the week. You have WWE, AEW, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, WOW Women of Wrestling. Any night of the week level we have TV. Do you think that now is a perfect time for someone to get into the wrestling business, or do you think the market is saturated enough now that the bubble could burst?
Honestly, the oversaturation is, I don't think, a good thing for the wrestling business. And one of the things that's it's great for fans because it's convenient, but it also doesn't make them want it and have to wait for it, meaning that you can go back and you can get on the internet and see what you missed and things like that. For us, growing up as a kid, probably one of the biggest things that they had going, the highlight of the show was if you were watching like Georgia Championship Wrestling, they would break out into something at the end of the show, and Gordon Sully would keep he would keep promoing the show out as we're going to stay as long as we can, and they would just keep on just stringing you along, and then Gordon Sully would be like, "That's all the time we have this week, wrestling fans. Tune in next weekend." And then, so that kept you hanging on, and you had to wait 7 more days to find out what's going on and what's happening, and you had something to look forward to. And these days, although it's convenient and easy for folks, it's an unfortunate thing because you're not able to reel them in emotionally like that.
All right. Well, at this point, I know Coach has more questions for you, so I'm going to pass these right back over to the coach with a moment.
right, Sexy Sean, okay? I got a right now to give a shout-out, a Northwest Cincinnati shout-out. One of my favorite teams right now is the Cincinnati Bengals with the Washington quarterback, Jake Browning. They're looking really good. He's about to score. Man, I'm really pulling for those guys. What do you think about them?
I think it's great. I think Browning has really, he stepped it up. And I remember somebody mentioning that, you know, he was just getting a fraction in that quarterback spot right now. And I said, well, right now he's proven that he's going to be worth the pay raise. And I think that's awesome and great that the Bengals are able to have somebody of that caliber to fill in, and a great opportunity for him. So wonderful thing for Cincinnati right now.
Yes, definitely. And I've been hearing people calling him Kurt Warner 2.0, and I think he's really doing a good job. So anyway, back to the interview. Did you play sports in high school or growing up?
I played in my elementary years. I played baseball, and then in my junior high, did collegiate wrestling, and then I did some football too. And then I guess, like I said, by the time I was a teenager, I got into the whole rock scene, and also got into the radio scene. I was had a little DJ spot at a local radio station, and done a little bit in the telecommunication world and the whole rock world, and obviously the wrestling. So it's been a very, very fun and interesting journey. I've definitely been blessed.
Nice. And was you able to promote your wrestling on the broadcasting?
I hadn't gotten to business yet. I was, I believe I was 14 at the time, and I think I was done with that by 16. So, as I mentioned, my first training actually officially got started with Brian Pillman right around, I believe I was in my mid-17 years. So, you know, headed to 18, but I was still 17. And Brian had wrote up a diet for me and a workout program and took me to the gym. And he was the first person to train me not only in pro wrestling, but to train me in the fitness world and to write out a diet for me. And he was going over at the time to a guy named John Perillo's, Perillo Performance, who also used to work with all the Bengals and the Reds players. So John was just a guru, and another place where I thought, wow, I'm out of place. I'm in here with Brian Pillman, and here's all these Bengals and Reds working out and all this stuff. So just a really, really cool opportunity for all that stuff, and I couldn't have learned from a better person.
Awesome. What a blessing. And then besides pro wrestling, what else do you have for self-defense background?
Kind of the deal with Josh Rafferty when he joined us, I would myself and Cody Hawk would help train him, and then he would teach us some jiu-jitsu. So learned a little bit of that, but never really ventured out to get into MMA or anything like that. I thought, I don't know about getting kicked in the face. That doesn't seem like a good idea to sign up for.
Yeah, and you're too pretty for that.
I got a lot of respect for those guys that and do that, because they go at it. And yeah, I've done a little bit of acting. I'm trying to keep my face intact.
Yes, definitely. Okay, now this next segment is called Memorable Matches. In your lifetime, what have been some of the most memorable matches you've seen? That includes VHS tape, internet, or live.
That I saw, so just of other people or of myself?
Other people. We'll get to you after.
Other people?
Yes.
One of the most memorable ones, I think, was just the whole concept was really cool, and a great tribute was when David Flair was got back from Japan, and he had the unfortunate death that happened in Japan, and they put Kerry Von Erich in that spot. And so in Texas Stadium, to beat Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight title. I thought that was just a really, really cool moment, a really great tribute to David.
Definitely, yes. Any other ones we might you might list?
Of course, like a lot of the feuds with Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express. You know, a lot of my stuff is a lot of the tag team stuff. So some great matches that the Midnight Rockers had with Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. I guess probably something that a lot of guys should study is like the Steamboat Savage at WrestleMania.
Yes, for sure. Okay, and now we're excited to hear about your most memorable matches.
Let's see. Well, the most memorable, only because the, I don't know if the match was top-notch, but the WWE had put myself and my old tag partner, Chris Michaels, on the Brock Lesnar Sleep Conference. Brock had been...
Hold on a second. You broke up. What did you say before that?
I was saying that maybe I'll start over here just to make sure we got it all in. The most memorable thing for me was something that WWE had put together called Eat, Sleep, Conquer, Repeat, and it was a Brock Lesnar DVD, and this is after Brock had been WWE Heavyweight Champion. Then he was the UFC Heavyweight Champion. And then he was back in the WWE and had been champion then. And the first match on the first DVD had the tag match of myself and Chris Michaels against what was called the Minnesota Stretching Crew. And that was Brock Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin. Shelton was Brock's old roommate in college. So they had put him together in the ring and had them in OVW. And so that would probably be most memorable because it's a WWE production and just something that was unexpected and cool because of the all the eyes that are in follow UFC and Brock being UFC heavyweight champion and then WWE heavyweight champion. That would be most memorable for that. As far as most memorable matches, probably I think on Shotgun, Kurt Angle and myself had a really, really good match. That was good, but of course, some of the stuff that where you have the best chemistry with, my tag part also had feuded, and it kind of reminded me of like a Benoit Guerrero type of scenario. We were never at that level. I mean, those guys are supreme on the ring. That's there, and that's we had that. And when he first got to OVW, we had that and showed that in the light heavyweight division.
Man, what an honor! And then you haven't worked any other characters besides Sexy Sean Casey, right? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't hear your answer. Sean.
I've always been Sean Casey. I learned that.
Okay, yeah, I hear you.
Okay, you got me?
Yes.
I've always been Sean Casey. I learned that from Brian Pillman because he used his real name. So, you know, I went and used my real name. I thought that was probably best. And, fortunately, Sean Casey became very popular in Cincinnati for the Cincinnati Reds. So it sure didn't hurt, you know, with the same name. That's his legit name, and that's my legit name. So that was kind of cool. But in the beginning of my career, I was Livewire Sean Casey. And then later on, I had worked for Ian Rotten, and he thought that I should be Too Sexy Sean Casey. Now, that might have got me a little bit of heat because I didn't know at the time we went head-to-head against USWA. And of course, back then, their top guy over there was Too Sexy Brian Christopher. And I had a valet at the time, and he decided that her name should be Deva. So this is Ian Rotten's idea. I didn't realize this whole thing, or I would have never probably agreed to it because I wasn't trying to get heat anywhere. But us running against USWA in Louisville on the same night, and then me being Too Sexy Sean Casey, and then my valet being Deva, which is Brian Christopher's shoot wife's name, probably wasn't in our best interest moving forward, but I didn't know. I was still green to the business, but just dropped on me Sexy Sean Casey from Jim Cornette, and that's been it ever since.
Okay. And then let's see. Who are your favorite people to work? Man, you work some of the best wrestlers in the world. Who are your favorites to work with?
People like Tracy Smothers and Ricky Morton, guys like that, not only were people I grew up idolizing, but they were just such a fountain of knowledge and such good-hearted people that, you know, they would pull you aside, and it wasn't just a payday for them just to get out of the building. They would actually stop and try to help you after your match and really kind of break it down. And so often in life, a lot of people just don't care. They're just trying to get in and get out. And these were good-hearted people that actually were trying to help you. And the same goes with Bobby Fulton. He gave me my first real big break, and he's been a mentor to me since 94. And I've learned so much from him, and he's taken the time to try to help whatever I didn't know or understand, explain it to me, and help elevate the ability that I have to either offer or in-ring or out of the ring.
Nice. And then you've also wrestled some of the toughest wrestlers in the world. Who were some of the toughest wrestlers you faced?
Toughest, probably like a Dave Bautista or a Brock Lesnar. Haven't been in the ring with Haku, but as legend tells it, they say he's the baddest guy in wrestling, but I've talked to him a few times, and he seems like a really good guy, but not somebody you'd ever want to cross.
For sure, yes. Okay, this next segment is called Favorites. I'm sure the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is if you drink coffee.
I like hot chocolate, so any kind of cocoa is always good, but not really coffee.
Okay, and then what have been your favorite concerts you've seen?
Favorite concerts? Motley Crue's my favorite band, so any of the Motley Crue shows that I've saw has always been great. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Big John, who was my bodyguard, and we traveled around for about 5 years, different places. He also, because he's so well-respected in the music industry, I had the privilege of going and meeting a lot of these guys, and I had a few times of being able to be on stage, and actually this was a real honor. During the song Something to Believe In, they usually bring out some of the veterans, and Brett sings a song, and some of the veterans are on stage, and John had me go out there because my dad's a veteran, and so I
wow.
thought, well, okay, and I felt out of place because I wasn't a veteran, so I kind of moved back from the stage, and this has got 20,000 people, in front of us, and thought, these are veterans, I need to give them their moment. It's still just a privilege to be up here and everything, but I'm back there by Ricky Rocket, and he's drumming, and he looks at me, and he's like trying to hand me his drumstick, and I didn't understand. I'm like, huh? He's like, take the stick. I'm like, okay. And he's like, drum with me. I'm like, I can't drum. So he wants me to try to help, drum in the middle of this. And he's like, just hit the cymbal. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm not really musically inclined. So John said he was in the front, and he was, he was on stage, and he was watching the show, he heard the song 1,000 times traveling with those guys, or probably 10,000 times, and he hears this tink in the background, and he turns around like, what's wrong with the sound? And he realizes I'm drumming with Ricky, and I'm all phone.
Oh, wow. Man, what a blessing. That is awesome. My goodness. What have been your favorite
really cool.
sports teams? Your favorite sports teams in your life?
favorite sports teams, of course, you got to go with the hometown heroes, the Bengals. But I'm actually a Cowboys fan. And I think I was reeled in by the cheerleaders, caught my attention, because that's a fetish of mine. I love cheerleaders. Gymnasts and cheerleaders seem to be a thing for me. But the Cowboys, then you learn about the football team. And they've really had some great players over the years, and you can't go wrong with them. They're America's team.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so we're getting down on the time here. Do you got like another 15, 20 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. All right, let me give you back over to Sign Guy then.
Okay.
Well, Sean, one of the places I'm sure you have wrestled is an infamous building. There's been many, many, many promotions over the years that have run the arena in Jeffersonville, Indiana. A lot of people have a wide variety of opinions on it. How do you feel about the arena?
Now, are you talking about the one that Ian Rotten and several different people had shared over there? I think they're running three or four different wrestling shows a week in the same building. Is that the one that you have in mind?
That's the one.
Okay. The arena's nice and everything, but when I was told that there's four different companies running in the same week, I just couldn't grasp the idea of that. When we were talking about oversaturation earlier, if it's oversaturated on different nights of the week for different wrestling promotions, how much oversaturation more do you need of every single night a different wrestling promotion in a building? I mean, it all comes down to nobody's going to come to that except for some friends and family and some niche crowd for that specific promotion. But it's hard enough to go head-to-head against a company, another company on TV on different nights of the week, but to go night-to-night against a competition, I just think it's doomsday for anybody that would want to do that.
What would you say has been your very favorite venue where you've wrestled?
Very favorite. I think the O'Hare Arena, I'm not sure what it's called now. It might be the Allstate Arena or something like that in Chicago. I did the light heavyweight tournament for the WWF in 1997, and I thought that was a really, really cool venue, and it was a cool moment and a great feel. But for like a big place, that really is a standout in my head. But there's been other different ones that were cool that have a lot of nostalgia to them, which I believe they tore it down and might have built a new one, but like Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, and then we worked at the Gund Arena in Cleveland, and different things like that. So there's some cool venues there, but OVW has a nice venue now that nothing like what we came up in OVW. In OVW, the first time we were there, and as I mentioned, they had the best talent come out of almost nothing. It was just a warehouse building with minimal seating, and Danny Davis had a very small production room, and we had one big fan that was blowing towards the ring, no air inside there, and a dressing room where we changed on benches, like if you're at a baseball game that the baseball players sit on the benches there. We had those across from each other in a little small locker room, and now OVW has like a little mini arena, and it's nice and everything, but again, sometimes I think that may hurt some of the guys, because once you're in something that nice, some of that humbleness that's inside of you probably gets lost or diverted, because it seems to be guys seem to do better, I believe, when they come from really hard times. And I'll use an example. If you remember in, I believe it was Rocky IV, that he went back to the streets and started training in the gyms with Apollo Creed, and that's where he had to find himself, because all the glitz and glamour he had got lost in and to find out who Rocky was, he had to go back in that type of setting.
And when you go to a new venue or a new area of the country, do you have any things set in mind as far as do you want to be sure that you have this or you pack this in your bag in case you need it, or do you do any research as far as what the venue you're going to might have as far as accommodations or necessities so you know how to pack, or do you just go to the building and hope that it's going to be nice enough to suit your needs personally?
Yeah, you know, in the independent scene, you just never know what you're going to be changed into. I mean, I've dressed in dressing rooms that some of the biggest celebrities have been in, and I've dressed in broom closets. So, you know, I prepare for whichever, and I have everything that I would need with me, and, you know, all you do is cross your fingers and hope that it's got a nice little dressing room. But if it doesn't, understand that you've been in the nicest and you've been in the worst. So you can do either, but whatever the call's for.
All right. Well, I am going to pass things right back over to the coach for the moment.
Hey, sign guy, if you got to go, you can go ahead and give your plug.
All right, well, I will do that real quick. You can find me on the social medias, the Book of Faces, the Twitter, the Gram, the YouTubes, Sign of the Times, episode 609, uploaded right now, so it'll be out for your viewing pleasure. Find me later this month on the 29th in Arlington, Washington for Combat Pro Wrestling Presents Theatrical Wrestling, and also on Turnbuckle Turmoil tomorrow we have our tribute to World Class Championship Wrestling with members of that great promotion, and also we're previewing the movie Iron Claw with, which should be a great time, and I'll also throw out there former Test of Turnbuckle Turmoil, Gary Morgenstern's latest book, A Dugout for Freedom, on bookshelves now at your favorite bookstore, so pick that up as well. And don't forget, you can also follow Chicken Bob on all the social media.
Thank you, Simon. We appreciate your time and everything you do for wrestling.
All right. Thank you, guys. Sean Casey, always a pleasure. Hope we'll see you down the line.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time and enjoyed it. Thank you so much. It was an honor and a privilege.
Thank you, Sean. And, hey, we're getting down to the end here, but I do have a few more questions, please. What other schools would you suggest for people? What other schools would you suggest for people?
Well, of course, if you're in the Midwest area, Cody Hawk still has his school, even though he's on the road with the micro wrestling group, and they're doing well now. They have a on the Discovery Channel, they have a reality show that's coming out, so he's done well there, but he's got some guys looking after his training school, and so if you want to be part of the Hawk Army, then definitely check that out. As I mentioned, you know, OVW is up this way, but I'm trying to think. You know, there's great places out where you're at on the West Coast. I know Billy Blade has a school, I think, still up and running over there. So his would be good to check out. And I also encourage any fans that afford to go to some.
You broke up after you said you were telling us about fans to go to.
Like that. If you're fans of the wrestling business and you're looking for your best bet.
Broke up again. Sorry, Sean.
You have the Hawk Army. You have OVW. Hello?
We're in a bad spot again.
Are we doing better now?
Yes, that's better. Sorry. We're getting to the end.
Okay.
It's good. We heard you with Cody Hawk,
okay.
Billy Blades, and OVW.
And then I was saying that, you know, if you can afford to do it, you know, going to somebody's school like a Booker T or something like that, that, you know, has a lot of pool in places, it's definitely going to be in your best interest to have that kind of people speaking for you because, I mean, you have to be a good talent. They're not going to put their name on you if, you know, if you can't shine a good light, good eye, you know, on them. But, you know, if you believe you're a good athlete, you think that you'll be a standout, you're definitely going to want to go the extra mile, and it will be worth it to you and worth the money to have somebody like that back in your name. I know the Dudley Boys also have a school, so there's a lot of different people out there that would be good and well-traveled for them to maybe move to that location, depending on how bad you want it and how much you want to get in the wrestling business and what your budget is, too.
For sure. And then who are some up-and-comers people should keep their eye on?
I'm trying to think here. I know they've been back and forth with that Hammerstone, but I think he's back in MLW. He's one, I think, that's a standout. And, of course, he's already there, but I think the next big thing for wrestling that we've not saw for a while is MJF. You know, he's got a huge buzz going on about him, and I think he's going to be, you know, the next big thing that is going to elevate.
Yes, okay. I'm listening.
AEW. Did I lose you again, Coach?
Yeah, I got you now. There?
Okay. I was just saying that, yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Just saying that MJF, I think, is leaving or he's already there or on his way for WWE. So look for big things from him.
Definitely. Yes. And I definitely want to say also, man, it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with you, get to be with you down there in Cauliflower Alley more than once. Got to get you one of my best NGW Green Room promos with you and Billy Blade talking about the Midnight Delight. What an honor getting to wrestle you in Washington State and then being in Heroes and Legends with you guys. Man, what a blessing. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Always a good time seeing you, Coach, and an honor to be part of everything that you have. And I can't thank you enough for that. And, thank all the fans that have followed the Five Most Wanted brand and Sexy Sean Casey throughout all the years. And looking forward to seeing everybody again soon.
Yes, and how do we get a hold of you, brother?
You can catch me on either my Instagram or of course, Facebook or Twitter at One Real Sean Casey.
Okay, and then you got a YouTube channel.
Actually, never did start that. I probably should have, but never really got that far in. And it's a lot of stuff to keep up with now. I jumped into that whole TikTok thing, but even that, you know, it's a funny thing because you almost have to have somebody run your social media for you.
Oh, yes. And then how's TikTok working out for you?
It's been okay. It's been decent, but there's another thing that they say is the next big thing to blow up. And I could see that, and it's something that Facebook doesn't own. So for people that have worked with Facebook and that, you know, a lot of times they have very stringent regulations in that. And so if you're trying to grow a social media platform, TikTok's probably the next way to go because you don't have the Facebook police standing over top of you and you're not having your account frozen or Facebook jail for 30 days or things that you hear a lot of guys complain about.
Yeah. And then you've done a lot of work for charity in the autism. What else would you like to promote, plug or promote when we wrap this up?
Well, of course, every year we do Hawks is a really, really worthy cause and a great thing to do here in Cincinnati. You have a lot of the local celebrities come out with Bengals and Reds players and some of the other local rock bands and different things like that. But always, always a wonderful thing and a very special occasion to do the Autism Rocks. But any other different things? I have a veterans celebrity golf.
So we only heard of celebrity golf. Sean. Hello, hello. Goodness, I know that you have rough signal over there. Hopefully we can finish this up. We're almost done. last thing we heard was celebrity golf. Sexy Sean Casey. I can see you're still here. All right, come on, Sean. Five most wanted. Still in the house. All right, well, until he comes back, I can give you guys my schedule here. I got on the 30th of December, I got Sam Sims. On the 13th of January, I got Evan Ginsberg, executive producer of the movie The Wrestler. And then on the 20th of January, I got Rampage Radisson. Sean Casey, are you back? Hello, hello. Oh, my goodness. Let me try this. I'll try shutting them off and turn them back on. We do have some technical difficulties here. Oh, he dropped. I see. Okay, hopefully. Oh, he can't call back. Past the time. Oh, okay. Well, looks like we were about done anyway. Oh, my goodness. I want to thank you guys all for calling in and for supporting us and for all your feedback and love and support. Thank you so much. And then you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most. Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. Oh, he might be back. Somehow they might let him come back. Let's see. The wheel's spinning. Hey, Sean. Sean. Hey. Are you back? Yeah, this thing is really acting up today. Normally, they don't let you call back in after an hour, so maybe that's why I can't hear you. Pretty much, we did pretty much end the show. But thank you so much, Sean, for your time and for all you do for wrestling and for the Five Most Wanted. Thank you so much. And you guys, you can check me out next, the 30th with Sam Sims. Thank you so much. And here is the Never Were with Coach Mike Jones Show walk-on song. Thanks a lot.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media post. You double dose, a diagnose. Feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Everybody say coach, coach.